We present Watto Jeeves by P.G. Wodehouse. Starring Michael Horden as Jeeves and Richard Briers as Bertie Wooster in Joy in the Morning, with Peter Woodthorpe as Percy Lord Worplesdon and Jonathan Cecil as Boko Fittleworth. Episode 7, Jeeves Sails into Action.
The sun was high in the heavens, or fairly high, when I awoke the morning after the East Wibley fancy dress dance. When last heard from, if you recall, I had just decanted my uncle by marriage, Percival Lord Worplesdon, into the back seat of Boko Fittleworth's limousine, and was on my way to fetch Boko to him. Uncle Percy had that evening brought off a notable business coup, and was, as a result, more or less pie-eyed. So I devoutly hoped that Boko would cash in on this unwonted geniality and secure the old boy's consent to his marriage to Nobby Hopwood. This was particularly desirable, as Nobby had promised that once she and Boko were fixed up, she would show Lady Florence Cray a letter I'd written a few days previously. I was depending on this letter, which roasted Florence in the most vigorous terms, to release me from my engagement to the blighted female. This had happened the previous evening, when her disagreement with her current fiancé, Stilton Cheesewright, over whether he should or should not earn his living as a country copper, had come to a head, and he had said something so red-hot about modern enlightened thought that she had immediately handed him his hat and signed up with me. Since then, I had had to put up with a good deal of unpleasantness from this Cheesewright, who quickly made it clear that his dearest wish was to catch me bending and arrest me for something. It was unfortunate, therefore, that as a result of lending Uncle Percy my Sinbad the Sailor costume for the ball, I had been compelled to attend the function in a uniform of Stilton's, pinched by Jeeves from the river bank while the zealous officer was swimming. However, on returning to Steeple Bumpley from the dance, I had straightaway consigned the bally thing to the dark waters of the same river, and was thus enabled to go to bed with something resembling a clear conscience. And as I say, the sun was highish in the heavens when I awoke next morning. On coming downstairs, I found Boko already restoring the tissues, with Nobby in attendance.
Hello, Bertie. I say, Bertie, isn't everything super colossal?
I don't know.
Is it, Boko? Did Uncle Percy give his consent?
He did, yes.
Splendid.
Everything went like a breeze. The thing was a love feast from beginning to end, Bertie. And all thanks to the grade A softening up job you did in advance.
Oh, not a bit.
No, we're terribly grateful to you for all you did, Bertie. Both of us. You're a lamb.
Well, maybe you're right. A touch of the lamb, perhaps.
I could kiss you.
Just what you wish. I say, you didn't get his consent in writing, Boko?
No, never occurred to me. But if what is in your mind is that he may try to back out of it, don't worry. You've no conception, Bertie, literally no conception of the chumminess which existed between us. Hands were shaken and backs slapped. He was all over me like a bedspread. Well, to give you some idea, he said he wished he had a son like me.
Well, considering he's got a son like Edwin, that isn't saying much.
Well, don't be a wet blanket, Bertie. Don't try to cast a gloom on this wonderful morning.
What became of the old boy at the close of the proceedings?
I suppose he pushed home on his pushbike. What did you do with Stilton's uniform?
I bunged it in the river before I went to bed.
A wise move.
Incidentally, as I was going to bed, I found a bally hedgehog between the sheets. Were you responsible, Fittleworth?
Certainly not. Shh, Bertie. Here comes Stilton up the garden path. He looks gruesomely official. Act naturally. Good morning, Stilton. Stick your head through the window, open your mouth, and I will throw a sardine into it.
How?
Stilton.
How? So, there you are, you blasted Wooster.
Yes, here I am. Well, where else would I be, my dear old Stilton? And this, thanks to Boko's princely hospitality, is where I'm living.
Oh, well, you won't be living here much longer, because you're Ballywell coming along with me.
What?
Coming along with you?
Surely, Stilton, you do not use that expression in the technical sense.
Yes, I do.
You've come to arrest, Bertie.
Yes, I have.
What for?
Pinching my uniform.
Have you been pinching Stilton's uniform, Bertie?
Certainly not.
How lucky.
I believe I know what's on Stilton's mind. I don't think I told you, but yesterday, while he was bathing, somebody snitched his uniform, which he'd left lying on the bank. One can't blame him for wanting to bring the criminal to justice, but why he's got this extraordinary idea that it was Bertie who was responsible for the foul outrage is more than I can understand. I told you yesterday, Stilton, that the hidden hand was almost certainly young Edwin's.
I've just been tackling Edwin about it. He denies it categorically.
And you accept his word?
Yes, I do. He has an alibi.
Oh, well, you perfect chump. Don't you know that that dishes him? Haven't you read any detective stories? Ask Lord Peter Wimsey what an alibi amounts to.
The oldest trick in the game.
Trot along and bust it, is my advice, Stilton.
If you want to know why I accept young Edwin's alibi, it's because it's supported by the vicar, the vicar's wife, the curate's sister, the doctor's aunt, a scoutmaster, 15 assorted tradesmen and 47 Boy Scouts. It appears that the doctor was giving a lecture on first aid in the village hall yesterday evening, and Edwin was the chap who went on the platform and was illustrated on. At the moment when my uniform was pinched, he was lying on a table, swathed in bandages, showing what you have to do to a bloke with a fractured thigh bone.
Ah.
It might have been an accomplice, cunningly disguised to look like Edwin.
Pah!
Yes. Well, that does seem to let Edwin out. But I still don't see where you get this extraordinary idea that Bertie's the culprit.
I'll tell you that too. Edwin, questioned, had an amazing story to relate. He stated that, going to the accused's bedroom later in the evening to put a hedgehog in his bed...
Boko, I apologise.
Not at all.
He saw the uniform there.
Oh.
And I met a chap this morning who'd been an extra waiter at the fancy dress ball at East Wibley last night, and he informs me that there was a loathsome-looking object taking part in the festivities, dressed in a policeman's uniform six sizes too large for him. I'm ready to step along, Wooster, if you are.
Yes. Right-ho. It's a fair cop.
Bertie, sit down. Just a minute, Stilton. Not so fast, officer. Have you a warrant?
Why, I... No.
Ooh, you must have a warrant. You can't make a summary arrest on a serious charge like this.
I don't believe it. I think you're talking through your hat. Still, I'll go to the station and ask the sergeant. And don't you move, Wooster.
He's gone. Right. You'll have to leg it, Bertie, without a second's delay. Get your car, drive to London and go abroad. They won't be watching the ports yet. Better look in on the Cohen Bros en route and buy a false moustache.
Absolutely, Boko. I was just thinking along the same lines myself. Tell Jeeves to follow with the personal effects, will you?
Yeah, of course, yes.
Righto, then. Toodle-pip! The word had scarcely left my lips before I was skimming garagewards like a greyhound released from the slips. And I was just about to fling wide the gates of the aforementioned garage when there suddenly came from the other side of the door the sound of a hoarse voice, and I paused, astounded. Unless the ears had deceived me, there was a human soul inside the edifice. It spoke again, and what enabled me to get abreast and identify the thorax from which it proceeded was the fact that one caught the name Fittleworth, preceded by a number of qualifying adjectives of a rugged and rather Elizabethan nature. In a flash, I got the whole setup. Driving away from the East Wibley Town Hall at the conclusion of the recent festivities, Boko must inadvertently have taken Uncle Percy with him. I drew in the breath with a startled whoosh, and for some moments stood rooted to the S, the brow furrowed, the eyes bulging. I found myself, frankly, unable to cope with the situation. It was one of those which seemed to call imperiously for a word or two of advice from Jeeves, and I was just regretting that he was not there when a gentle cough at my rear told me that he was. Jeeves!
Sir?
Do you know what's happened?
No, sir.
That borderline case Fittleworth has locked Uncle Percy in the garage.
Sir?
Well, don't you understand? Last night at the fancy dress dance, the two of them struck up such a beautiful friendship that Uncle Percy happily gave his consent to Boko and Nobby's marriage. Now, less than 12 hours later, the aged relative, if my ears deceive me not, is threatening to skin Boko alive, lingeringly and with a blunt knife.
Most disturbing, sir.
Is that all you can say? Good Lord, Jeeves.
Sir?
I've just remembered what I'm doing out here. I am a fugitive from a chain gang.
Indeed, sir?
Absolutely, you haven't heard the latest. Stilton. He has found out about that uniform and has gone off to get warrants and things.
Indeed, sir.
Yes, young Edwin, creeping into my room last night in order to insinuate a hedgehog into my bed, saw the thing lying there and went and squealed to Stilton, the degraded little copper's knock. Only by making an immediate getaway can I hope to escape undergoing the utmost rigours of the law. You see the frightful dilemma I'm on the horns of. My car's in the garage. To get it, I shall have to open the door. And opening the door involves having Uncle Percy come popping out like a cork out of a bottle.
You shrink from an encounter with his lordship, sir.
Yes, Jeeves. I shrink from an encounter from his lordship.
In that case, sir, it might be better if you were to return to the house and allow me to extricate his lordship.
Would you, Jeeves?
Certainly, sir.
pretty white of you.
Not at all, sir.
Carry on, then, Jeeves.
Very good, sir. I will bring your car to the front door so that you will be enabled to make an immediate start.
Right-ho. And now I shall have to go and have a word with the literary screwball responsible for this mess.
Bertie, haven't you gone yet?
No, Boko, I have not.
Well, what's the idea of coming in here and trilling with laughter? Where's your car?
In the garage.
Well, then get it out of the garage.
I can't. Uncle Percy's in there.
What?
Yes, Fittleworth. My Lord Warbleston is locked in your garage. He has been in your car all night, and he is chafing just a trifle at the treatment.
In my car? But how is he in my car? He can't have been in my car. I mean, why didn't I notice him?
Because you're a fathead.
Fathead is right. Of all...
Just a minute, darling.
Of all
them... Yes.
Of all them chippers.
Quite. Yeah, but half a second, Angel. Bertie and I are threshing out an important point. Now, let me just try to envisage what happened after you left last night, Bertie. Here's the sequence as I recall it. I had my talk with old Warbleston, and as I told you, secured a guardian's blessing. And then... Yes... Then I went back to the ballroom to tread the measure for a while.
Of all the gibbering half
measures. Exactly. And I was doing this when it suddenly occurred to me that Nobby was probably tossing sleeplessly on her pillow, dying to hear how everything had come out. And I felt I must get home immediately and go and bung gravel at her window. I raced back to the car accordingly, sprang to the wheel and drove off. Why, I see now why I didn't notice old Warbleston. Obviously, the man by that time had passed out and was lying on the floor.
Watch it, Boko. Here he comes.
Who?
Uncle Percy.
What? Fittleworth! You hellhound!
Hello. Would you like a sardine?
Sardine!
You would feel better when you've had some breakfast, Uncle Percy.
I shall not. The only thing that can make me feel better is to thrash that pay-faced young warthog Fittleworth within an inch of his life. But, get me a horsewhip.
I don't believe we have one. Are there any horsewhips on the premises, Boko?
No, no horsewhips.
What a house! Jeeves! Where is he? There you are, Jeeves. Go to the hall and bring me my horsewhip with the ivory handle.
Yes, Lord.
I think it's in my study, if not hand about for it.
Very good, my lord. No doubt her ladyship will be able to inform me of the instrument's whereabouts.
What?
Her ladyship, my lord.
Her ladyship?
Yes, my lord.
Aunt Agatha, you mean, Jeeves?
Yes, sir.
But her ladyship...
Returned unexpectedly late last night, my lord.
Oh, God.
Golly, Uncle Percy, this is a bit awkward, is it not? You'll have to devote a minute or two when you see her to explaining why you were out all night, won't you?
Jeeves.
My lord.
Jeeves.
My lord.
Her ladyship, Jeeves. Tell me, is she by any chance aware of my absence?
Yes, my lord. She was apprised of it by the head housemaid. I left them in confidence. You tell me his lordship's bed has not been slept in, her ladyship was saying. Her agitation was most pronounced.
Oh, God.
How would it be, Uncle Percy, how would it be if you told her the truth?
The truth?
That you went to the ball to confer with Clem.
I could never convince your aunts that I'd gone to a fancy dress ball from purely business motives. Women are so prone to think the worst.
Something in that.
And it's no good trying to make them see reason because they talk so damn quick. No. Oh, this is the end. I can only set my teeth and... take me medicine like an English gentleman.
Unless, of course, Jeeves has something to suggest.
You mean? Oh, no, it's impossible. The situation is beyond Jeeves.
No situation is beyond Jeeves. In fact, I believe something is fermenting now inside that spacious bean. Am I wrong, Jeeves?
No, sir, you are quite correct. I think that I may perhaps be able to afford a satisfactory solution to his lordship's difficulty.
You mean that, Jeeves?
Yes, my lord.
Then let us have it. What is the solution which you speak?
Well, sir, it occurred to me that as his lordship has, I understand, given his consent to the union of Mr. Fittleworth and Miss Hopwood...
I haven't. Or if I did, I've withdrawn it.
Oh, very good, my lord. In that case, I have nothing to suggest.
May as well hear what you've got to say, I suppose.
Quite. No harm in having, what, Jeeves?
An academic discussion, sir.
Thank you, Jeeves.
Not at all, sir.
Carry on, then.
Very good, sir. It merely occurred to me that had his lordship consented to the union, nothing would have been more natural than that he should have visited Mr. Fittleworth at his house for the purpose of talking the matter over and making arrangements for the wedding. Immersed in this absorbing subject, his lordship would quite understandably have lost count of time. And when he looked at his watch and found how late it was, Mr. Fittleworth hospitably suggested that he should pass the remainder of the night beneath his roof.
Nope, it wouldn't work.
Oh, why on earth not? It's a pip.
No, Bertie, the scheme is not practical. Your aunt, my dear boy, is a suspicious woman. She probes beneath the surface and asks questions. And the first one she would ask on this occasion would be, why, merely in order to discuss wedding arrangements with Reward's future husband, did I dress up as Sinbad the Sailor?
Ah, a snag, Jeeves. Can you get round it?
Quite easily, sir. Before returning to the hall, his lordship could borrow a suit of clothes from you, sir.
Of course he could. Clad in the herringbone tweed, which is in the cupboard in my bedroom, Uncle Percy, you could look Aunt Agatha in the eye without a tremor.
Good Lord! You're quite right. So I could. Oh, Jeeves, you must have that brain of yours pickled and presented to some national museum.
Very good, my lord.
When you've done with it, of course. Come on, Barty! Action! Action! Who for the herringbone tweed?
This way, Uncle Percy.
Just a minute.
Oh, Boko.
Not so jolly fast, if you don't mind. How about that guardian's blessing? Do I cop?
Of course you do, old bird. That's all budgeted for in the estimates, isn't it, Uncle Percy?
Eh? What?
The guardian's B. You're dishing that out.
Yeah. Seems unavoidable.
It is unavoidable.
Then I won't try to avoid it.
Okay, Boko, you're all set.
Good. I'll just have that in writing, if you don't mind, my dear Worplesdon.
What?
I don't want to carp or criticise, but there's been a lot of in and out running about this business to present date, and one would welcome a few words in black and white.
Very well. Lost it. Well, there you are.
Thank you, my dear Worplesdon. Oh, golly, here comes Stilton again.
Ho!
Ah, there you are, Stilton.
Ho! You were right about that warrant, Boko. The sergeant says I've got to have one. I brought it along. It has to be signed by a justice of the peace. Why, hello, Lord Worplesdon. You're just the man I was looking for. I didn't recognise you under all those whiskers. If you'll shove your name on the dotted line, we can go ahead. So you went to that fancy dress ball last night?
What do you mean I went to a fancy dress ball last night? I did nothing of the kind. And I should be glad if you will refrain from making loose statements in that description. Went to a fancy dress ball, indeed. What fancy dress ball? What? It is news to me that there has been a fancy dress ball.
Oh, sorry, I just thought... the costume, I mean.
And what about the costume? If me ward and her future husband are planning an evening of amateur theatricals and ask me as a personal favour to put on the costume of Sinbad the Sailor to see if I was the type for the part, is it so singular that I should good-humouredly have acceded to their wishes?
No.
And is it any business of yours?
Would you mind signing this warrant?
Warrant? What warrant? What's all this about? What's all this nonsense about warrants?
If I might explain, Your Lordship.
Mm.
It appears that in the course of yesterday afternoon, the officer's uniform was purloined as he bathed in the river. He accuses Mr. Wooster of the crime.
Mr. Wooster? Barty? My nephew?
Yes, my lord. To me, a most bizarre theory. One seeks in vain for a motive which could plausibly have led Mr. Wooster to perpetrate such an outrage.
He wanted... Because, officer! Carry on, James.
The constable, I understand, my lord, alleges that Mr. Wooster desired the uniform in order to be able to attend the fancy dress ball.
He did! Shut! There really was a fancy dress ball, was there?
Yes, my lord, at the neighbouring town of East Wibley.
Odd. I never heard of it.
A very minor affair, my lord, I gather. Not at all the sort of entertainment in which a gentleman of Mr. Wooster's position would condescend to participate.
But you say the officer sticks to it that he did. He did!
Yes, my lord. It is fortunate, therefore, that your lordship passed the night in this house.
And so is able to testify that Mr. Wooster never left the premises.
Oh, dashed fortunate. Settles the whole thing.
I tell you, the accused, Wooster, did pinch my uniform. It was seen on his bed by the witness, Edwin.
Edwin, Uncle Percy. One smiles, does one not?
Smiles? Oh, certainly one smiles. Like the Dickens. Are you trying to tell me, officer, that this preposterous accusation of yours is based on the unsupported word of my son Edwin? I can scarcely credit it. It's outrageous. I advise you in future, officer, to be careful. Very careful. And as for that warrant of yours, you can take it and stick it wherever that is, neither here nor there.
Ho! Ho! It's a bally conspiracy. It's a low-down, horn-swoggling plot to defeat the ends of justice. For the last time, Lord Worplesdon, will you sign this warrant?
I have already indicated what you can do with that warrant. I think, officer, that it would be well if you were to go and sleep it off. For the kindest interpretation which I can place on your extraordinary behavior is that you are intoxicated.
Oh.
But show the constable the door.
Stilton, the door. Here it is.
Oh. It's a bally conspiracy. Oh. Oh.
Oh, this be there. And now, Bertie, my boy, for the herringbone tweed. Also a bath and a shave and a cup of strong black coffee with perhaps the merest suspicion of red in it. And perhaps it would be as well, when I'm ready to start for the hall, if you were to accompany me to add your testimony to mine regarding my spending last night under this roof. Right, my boy. Let us go.
I escorted Uncle Percy to my room, dug out the suit, showed him the bathroom, and left him to it. When I got back to the dining room, Boko had gone, but Nobby was still there chatting with Jeeves. She greeted me warmly.
Boko's gone to fetch his car, Bertie, and we're going to run up to London to get married. He's had the license tucked away in his desk for weeks. Wonderful how everything's come out, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Nobby, have you shown Florence that letter of mine?
I knew there was something I'd forgotten. Oh, Bertie, I'm so sorry.
Sorry?
But I've been meaning to tell you. When I got up this morning, I couldn't find that letter anywhere. And I was looking for it when Edwin came along and told me he'd done an act of kindness last night by tidying my room. But I think he must have destroyed the letter. He generally does destroy all correspondence when he tidies rooms. I'm most awfully sorry, but I expect you'll find some other way of coping with Florence. Ask Jeeves here. He's sure to think of something.
Nobby!
Oh, there's Boko. Goodbye, Bertie. Goodbye, Jeeves. I must rush.
Well, Jeeves.
Yes, sir.
Can you think of a course to pursue?
No, sir.
You are baffled?
For the moment, sir, unquestionably. I fear that Miss Hopwood overestimated my potentialities.
Oh, come, come, Jeeves. Not like you to be a... What's the word? It's on the tip of my tongue.
Defeatist, sir?
That's right, yes. It's not like you to be a defeatist. Don't give it up. Go and brood in the kitchen. There may be some fish there. Did you notice any when you were there yesterday?
Only a tin of anchovy paste, sir.
Anchovy paste is a slender reed on which to lean in a major crisis. Still, it is fish within the meaning of the act and no doubt contains its quota of phosphorus. Go and wade into it.
Very good, sir.
Don't spare the stuff. Dig it out with a spoon.
Very good, sir.
And when you do spear a solution, I shall be outside in the garden.
Wooster?
Oh, my golly. Stilton.
Don't run away. Stand still, you blasted object. I have something to say to you.
You couldn't write.
No, I could not write. Don't wriggle. Listen, you know that engagement of yours?
To Florence?
To Florence. It's off.
Off?
Off.
What do you mean?
You can understand words of one syllable, can't you? I tell you, your engagement is off. Florence is going to marry me. I met her as I came away from this pest house and had it out with her. After that revolting exhibition of fraud and skullduggery there, I had decided to resign from the force. And I told her so. It removed the only barrier there had ever been between us.
Questioned, she broke down and came clean, admitting that she'd always loved me and had got engaged to you merely to score off me for something I'd said about modern enlightened thought. I withdrew the remark, and she fell into my arms. She seemed not to like the idea of breaking the news to you, so I said I would do it. And if young blasted Worcester has anything to say, I told her, I will twist his head off and ram it down his throat. Have you anything to say, Worcester?
Not a thing.
You realize the position? She has returned you to store. No ruddy wedding bells for you.
Quite.
Good. You will be leaving here fairly soon, I take it?
Almost at once.
Good. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Stilton. Jeeves!
Sir?
Come out here! Never mind the anchovy paste. It'll not be required. I've just seen Stilton. A reconciliation has taken place between him and Lady Florence, and they are once more headed for the altar rails. So, there being nothing to keep us in Steeple Bumpley, let's go.
Very good, sir. The car is ready.
Oh, but dash it, we can't!
Sir?
I just remembered I promised Uncle Percy to go up to the hall with him as soon as he's had his bath and help him cope with Aunt Agatha.
Her ladyship is not at the hall, sir.
What? But you said she was.
Yes, sir. I fear I was guilty of a subterfuge. I regretted the necessity, but it seemed to me essential in the best interests of all concerned.
Egad, Jeeves.
Yes.
Well, how would it be to zoom off immediately without waiting to pack?
I was about to suggest such a course myself, sir.
It would enable one to avoid tedious explanations.
Precisely, sir.
Then shift ho, Jeeves, shift ho! I must say, Jeeves, that during the recent proceedings, there were moments when I came very near to despair.
Indeed, sir?
Within a touch of Jeeves.
Unquestionably, affairs had developed a certain menacing trend, sir.
I saw no ray of hope. It looked to me as if the bluebird had thrown in the towel and formally ceased to function. And yet here we are, all boomsa-daisy. Makes one think a bit, that.
Yes.
There's an expression on the tip of my tongue which seems to me to sum the whole thing up, you know. Or rather, when I say an expression, I mean a saying, a wheeze, a gag. What I believe is called a saw. Something about joy doing something.
Joy cometh in the morning, sir?
That's the baby. Not one of your things, is it?
No, sir.
Well, it's dash good. Dash good. Joy cometh in the morning.
In Jeeves Sails into Action, the last episode in the series, the parts were played as follows. Jeeves, Michael Horden, Bertie Wooster, Richard Briers, Percy, Lord Worplesdon, Peter Woodthorpe, Boko Fittleworth, Jonathan Cecil, Nobby Hopwood, Rosalind Adams, and Stilton Cheesewright, Michael Kilgariff. Joy in the Morning by P.G. Woodhouse was adapted for radio by Chris Miller. The program was produced by Simon Brett.